That's just a cool recording, man.
Yeah, brother, like, solid, right on.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
You know, it's hard to believe that the first week of 2024 is already over, but I'm doing good. How are you,
Earl? Kevin, we don't want to talk about it being over already. Sandy and I don't want to.
152nd of the year.
We don't want to talk about that it's over so quickly because, Sandy, we know how quickly
time flies.
Time flies,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, Calvin, the young guy brings up, hey,
I've got this theory. You know, every day is a percentage of the life you've lived, and the longer the life you've lived, the smaller the percentage that day is. So it goes fast. It's like Einstein's relativity. It's my theory on why, as we age, time flies.
It does truly fly, but not fast enough for Calvin. Calvin, you didn't say it's Friday. It's, you know.
It is that, too. I'm excited for the weekend.
Hey, young man. Never rush time.
That was last week's. That was last week's homily.
And the week before that.
Yeah.
So anyway, if you're just joining us, that's Sandy Williams, my co-host. You can join us at 844-967-2789. A lot to talk about, Sandy. But before we go there, there was an epic battle last night. Man, Giannis against Wembanyama.
Wembanyama?
Yeah, Wembanyama. If you don't know who that is, it's a 20-year-old guy, just turned 20 last night.
Yeah.
Is he 7'3"?
Yeah, he looks like a stick figure until he moves, and then he's graceful and talented.
He is so coordinated that he's a 7'3" point guard. I mean... The guy, we see Giannis get a rebound and dribble up the court, and he's like, you know, a bowling ball knocking down bowling pins. This guy dribbles up the court and is able to not run over people. He's graceful.
He doesn't have the physical mass of Giannis.
Well, now,
Giannis looked that skinny when he came in the league, too. But I think this guy will do well to. I think the problem with Giannis is that he started to be a muscular player, right? His game is muscle. He puts his shoulder down, moves people out of the way,
right.
and is lucky not to get called for offensive fouls.
Moves them out of the way or runs them over.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but you know, the league has become
allowed him to do that.
Allowed him to do it. They've become very tolerant of four steps, not three, and shoulder down, and you know, and so, but I think Wembanyama looks like he's the real deal, and he's got lots of assists in games.
Sandy, after watching him last night, first time I really got a chance to see him, I am as impressed with him as any player that I can remember. He just turned 20 years old.
I mean, we should remember Giannis's first years in the league, the Bucks were not doing well.
And
the Spurs are not yet doing well. But I'll bet I bet by the end of the season they're doing quite well.
Well, Giannis didn't know how to play basketball when he came in. He still doesn't know how.
Wembanyama
knows how to play the game. He makes the guys around him better. And so just to give you an idea of something that you may not take note of, but I did last night. One of his teammates missed a game-tying three-pointer. Wide open. Wembanyama set him up. The guy missed it. Wembanyama went over to him, put his arm around him, and said, hey, it's okay, man. Right? If it was Giannis, and his teammate missed it, he'd storm off the court in a fit.
Well, you know, I just think that I don't know whether Giannis has become a prima donna, but I do think that there's been a change in his approach, and I think that the big stars in the league, the Doncic and Jokic, those guys are big time team players. Some of the greatest cheers they get are for the amazing passes they make, and the way they see the court. And I think the problem is this concept of seeing the court. I think Giannis earlier in his career was more of a soccer player type, a guy who knew how to make a pass and have an assist. And lately, I think he's keeping score. I think both he and Damian are themselves keeping score of how much they score.
I think Calvin's got something there, Calvin.
I will give you guys that Giannis maybe is a little ball hoggy at times. My point was going to be, though, that he had 7 assists last night, and he had a triple-double a few weeks ago. He does pass the ball. I think there's chemistry issues certainly right now, but on Damian Lillard, I followed his career before he came into Milwaukee, and there's always a stretch in the middle of the season where you're thinking, what is going on with Damian Lillard? And I think we're kind of in that stretch right now. He's struggling from three-pointer a few games in a row, but I think let's give it to the All-Star break before we panic too much.
So let me say this. So, Sandy, even if Giannis does get 7 assists or whatever it is, he turns the ball over 5 times. Yeah. I don't want that guy leading us in assists. He shouldn't be handling the ball. You and I talk about it all the time. Why would I want him bringing the ball up the court if I've got Damian Lillard to bring the ball up?
Well, I think that assists are a big deal, and I think that ball control is a big deal, and I think defense is a big deal, and those are the things that seem to make the difference in the championships.
Right.
In the championships. It might not make the difference during the season because I think everybody in the league tries to pace themselves, and they're all experimenting. They're experimenting with their roster. They're experimenting with the way they play. And my hope is that this coach actually is doing that right now. But my fear is that in a way, I think that the management has handed the managerial keys
to Giannis
and to Damian. It's their team. They talk about it. The two of them talk about it. The team being a partnership. Actually, it should be a quadriship. Should be 5 of them. So that's worrisome. I think that the championship teams are the ones that really know how to play team ball, and the team leaders they've got, people like Jokic and Doncic, are super team players.
So while we're on sports, man, we don't do it. So the Packers are playing the Bears.
Yeah.
And people are assuming that they're automatically going to beat the Bears.
It always worries me. And anytime in any football game where people start counting their chickens before the game, where they get complacent. That's happened during this season. It happened last year. Detroit. We were definitely going to beat Detroit, right? Didn't happen. And you know, this year we've tended to lose games where we could have won. You know, we've won games we shouldn't win, and we've lost some games we probably should have won.
So it's a big game for the Packers. Calvin, you can join in. It's a big game for the Packers, but it's also a big game for the Bears. If they get a chance to knock the Packers off, that means a lot to them as well.
Are they eliminated?
Yes, the Bears are eliminated.
Okay. It's a lot easier to play if you're eliminated. It's like Detroit was eliminated last year, I believe.
Oh, yeah. But the Bears clearly want to knock the Packers off. And they're a better team now than they were when they played them the first game of the season. Calvin?
I totally agree. I am very nervous. I don't have a good feeling about it. It feels like a trap, just like Sandy said, the Lions game last year. Justin Fields is playing better. The Bears defense is playing better.
They're a better team.
A lot of reasons to be concerned, but keep your fingers crossed,
well,
I guess.
To be honest with you, the game is going to be won by the Packers if their defensive line can contain Justin Fields, and if their linebackers can control the run, and if their D-backs are able to contain the receivers long enough to give the defensive line a chance to chase down Justin Fields. You know, this isn't, you know, we always talk about the offense and what have you, but I think when the Packers lose a game, it tends to be on the defensive side. Now, Joe Barry was getting a bum rap earlier in the season,
right?
Because we were losing games and the other team was scoring 17 points or 20. Right. That's a good defensive, particularly if you had a bunch of possessions.
Points,
so. So my view is if the defense shows up, they'll win the game.
So Sandy and Calvin got a if the Bears win, I'm gonna dye my hair gray.
do you promise? There you go. You don't have to dye it. You just have to keep
let
your,
it grow out.
Let it grow.
Well, you see, it's happening, right?
That's what you tell me.
Oh, Sandy, it's happening.
I'm counting on that because I know you, Earl, and I know that vanity is not that high.
It's growing out, but anyway, we got a lot to talk about this morning. A lot of serious things to cover. When we come back, Sandy, I want to talk about the ultra wealthy sitting on $8.5 trillion in profits since 2022. Untaxed. And can you explain?
Well, the tax code reduced the tax rate for certain kinds of income quite materially. And it also gave corporations, while the nominal tax rate for corporations looks to be at a somewhat appropriate level, I think it's 31%, the deductions that were created, particularly the capital investment deduction, which is instead of depreciating it, you can take the whole capital expenditure in year one, has had a huge effect on the taxes to be paid by corporations. So, yeah, I mean, you know, since the time of the Tax Reduction Act, during the Trump period, there has been major changes in who pays taxes and how much.
All right, 844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Friday. It means Fridays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. You can join the conversation as well. I knew it was the Birds.
Yeah, but you forgot.
Don't let the color of the hair fool you. I'm still the guy who...
You're still slipping.
Come on, man. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Friday. It means Friday's my co-host, Sandy. So, Sandy, when we look at, this article is in the Huffington Post this morning, the ultra-wealthy are sitting on $8.5 trillion in untaxed 2022 profits, the report says, thanks to a tax code slanted towards billionaires and sent to millionaires, the government is missing out on huge sums that could help fund critical programs. You buy any of that?
I do. I definitely buy that. I mean, I think that there isn't enough attention paid to the revenue side. You know, we've got increasing talk about the deficit, the national debt. Our national debt now exceeds our GDP by a bit, which is means that it's getting less comfortable for us. I listened to Tom Krugman yesterday, a liberal economist.
Right.
I didn't buy all of his talk. You know, on the one hand, economists, particularly of his ilk, want to talk about how the national debt doesn't matter in almost any circumstance. And then the other hand, they'll talk about how and when it does matter. And the main thing is that the GDP represents where from whence we can get money on an ongoing basis. It's the revenue stream that's coming into the economy every year in a way, or the revenue stream being generated. There's also wealth that people sit on that is different than the GDP, not counted in the GDP. So that's wealth accumulated. And two things. One, we aren't taxing wealth now much at all, and secondly, we have changed the way we tax the revenue stream in a manner that leans in the direction of favoring those who generate a great deal of wealth. We've got reduced tax rates for people who have something called carried interest, which means that they take a percentage of a deal as a real estate developer like Donald Trump or a private equity owner, and they take a percentage as part of their compensation. So when they sell whatever it is, whether they sell the company or sell the building, they get money that is treated as if it's capital gains rather than income, regular income. And that shift has occurred dramatically, and particularly for private equity owners. A great deal of the money they earn is taxed at a lower rate than Tom, Dick, and Mary pay.
So Sandy, here's the real issue. It changed. How do we bring it back into what's makes sense for the American people, where the American people, you know, don't have to suffer through this because of tax laws that were changed to benefit a handful of people?
Well, we need to get the conversation corrected. We need to get the conversation corrected about what Tom, Dick, and Mary need in terms of helping them, the middle-class family, survive in today's economy, with an economy whose structure is shifting in a manner that makes it more difficult for them. And it's shifting in a way that the government could look at. So, you know, child daycare, health care.
Who's carrying that message?
Well, it needs to get into the political process. How do we get the political process properly adjusted? I have to agree with Tom that money in politics obviously has become a big factor in causing the political debate to not focus on the things we need to have it focus on. And we need to have people who are Tom, Dick, and Mary, become more disciplined and less likely to let their emotions get poked by politicians so that they start talking about the sparkly objects, things that matter to them emotionally but don't matter to them in terms of their day-to-day life, like how much taxes do I pay as compared to Fat Cat? How much am I suffering as the result of the shift in all of the benefits that have occurred over the last 50 years, shifting away from business-provided benefits to self-provided benefits, which come after the salary check instead of before?
You know, Sandy, they've done such a magnificent job of getting that average person to be concerned about the wealthy. Well, we shouldn't be taxing the wealthy as much. They've made their money. I hear average Joes having this conversation, Sandy, protecting those people.
Yeah, they worked hard to make their money. If we tax it, it'll remove incentives to work hard and make that money. And a lot of that's falderol, okay? Other countries tax at different rates and seem to have the same kind of incentive on the part of business owners to do well, okay? And secondly, some of them are just technicalities that have been lobbied. So, for instance, the private equity carried interest concept. If you get a private equity owner in a room and you start talking to him about that, they get a very wry grin on their face, a guilty one, when they talk about the fact that they've succeeded in having a huge portion of their income. I mean, private equity owners who are successful are earning money in the tens and twenties of millions a year, and they're getting taxed as if it's capital gain when they don't have essentially don't have their own money. They don't have a dog in the fight.
So
their skin is not in the game in the same manner as you. Your skin is in the game if you invest in something with your money, and then you're taking the risk that it'll go down or go up. That's different than if you're simply going to get paid if you hit home runs.
So, Sandy, again, the majority of the American people aren't aware of this stuff. As you always like to say, it's complicated. And so, you know, who's going to fight that battle to bring this to a point where we can start seeing some changes in it?
Well, I think, you know, we have had politicians, obviously,
Bernie Sanders.
Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. A number of people tried to fight this, but they get marginalized. They get accused of being radical. You know, is it radical? No, it's not radical. But if you can accuse people of being radical, and if you throw garbage on the wall and it sticks, then you've accomplished something. And so the K Street, the privileged interests have become very good at declaring people to be radicals if they attempt to focus directly on something like this, the tax code, and to shift revenues, number one, to increase taxes and to shift the revenue code in a manner that is more progressive. I mean, there's been a great deal of effort on the part of conservatives to make progressive a bad word.
All right, got to go to a break. When we come back, we're going to discuss Senator Lindsey Graham saying America is full. That's what we should give the answer to the people at the border. We'll return.
When you're alone and life is making you lonely, you can always go
downtown.
When you've got worries, all the noise and the hurry seems to help.
Yeah.
I know.
I'm slipping here.
Downtown. Hey, you know what? Dye your hair black and you won't slip anymore.
Wow, I look strange.
Or dye it brown.
Yeah.
Or, you know, strawberry blonde like Donald Trump.
Yeah, so that was my color, man. Well, it wasn't orange. This is I'll Think of Ruth.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Petula Clark.
That's right.
You can text us at that same number.
Australian, as I recall.
So, you know, we were talking about, you know, the wealth, the ultra wealthy, and why these things have been allowed to happen. And so before we went to the break, and so Tom from L.A. is on board. Tom, good morning to you. You say what?
Good morning, guys. First off, go Pack, go. I think the players are taking it seriously. People might think that the Packers are just going to win, but from the sounds of it, Jordan Love and the rest of the guys are taking it very seriously, and the defense as well. So I'm
going to be a good game,
the
man.
Packers themselves. Second, we the people ultimately are the government collectively, and you know what? United we stand, divided we fall. If you have any politician that tells you that they're going to divide and conquer a state, run the opposite direction, or just hold on to a person next to you, because divided, we all fall. And the bottom line with money and politics, and I hope, Earl, you keep on saying, especially to your new listeners, because they may not have even gotten a taste of this, but maybe you can explain to them what Citizens United is about, corporations giving unlimited money to politicians, and how that conservative Supreme Court has destroyed everything. Because now you do have media types out there that make a lot of money off of advertising from who? The politicians. Politicians are actually bribed and bought by the corporations. It's just a wicked cycle. This is not complicated. The billionaires are We got four families in this country making more money than 70% of the rest of the country. That is not a difficult concept, people. The bottom line is that it should be fairness, and everyone, they should be paying just as much as all of us. And if there's a way that we can go back to some type of deductions that actually make sense, or where the CEO doesn't take a salary and then doesn't pay his taxes, this is ridiculous, and it's a pretty easy concept.
Well you know, really, Tom, Sandy, I had a guy who told me last year, Earl, are you aware of who the first trillionaire is going to be? It's going to be Elon Musk. Can you imagine? He's going to be a trillionaire. And I said, man, listen to what you're saying. One guy with $1 trillion. How is that? How does that make any sense, Sandy?
Well, you know, it doesn't. But, you know, the lobby would say, well, you've got to give people the incentive. You need incentives to keep going, right?
A trillionaire?
Yeah, so that shows how out of whack are the upside of our potential incentives is. And it's true that since 1995, we've seen an absolute meteoric rise in the accumulated wealth of the very wealthy. And at the same time, we've seen a decline in the wealth capacity of the middle class. People, you can look at numbers and say, well, they own stock or whatever, but, you know, that's because they own 401ks, and the 401k is there to replace a pension, which was going to be far more generous than their ability to finance their retirement out of their rather paltry 401ks. And so, you know, we just need to start asking the right questions. When people say things that seem to support the status quo, we need to start asking them the right questions that demonstrate that the status quo needs to be improved. We need to be in continual improvement. We should not be, when we criticize the current circumstance only for the purpose of correcting it, it should not be viewed as anti-American or unpatriotic. What we need to be doing, if we're patriots, is improving the situation and making the level of comfort and security that those with wealth might have greater. What we've got right now is an increasingly paranoid wealthy class, and the reason is they understand that the concentration of wealth has become unsustainable and disproportionate in this society, and what we've got is essentially the same fear that drove the fear in the South of the Nate Turner rebellion pre-Civil War.
So Sandy, there's a smaller and smaller group of Americans who are going to be able to retire. I mean, that's just the reality of it, right?
Yes.
That less and less are going to be able to do that. Let's go to Mark from the site. Good morning to you, Mark. You say what?
Yeah, once again, I hear Elon Musk's name, and I can't help but think about, there's a little creature. It's a North American creature, but it's here in the state of Wisconsin, and it's a stink pot. It's a stink pot turtle, and its name actually, official name is actually a musk turtle. So whenever I think of Elon Musk, I just think of stink, Elon stink, or Elon stench rather than musk. To get to the real topic, is that the societal wealth that we could generate by reforming the tax code, by reforming our immigration policy, because you're just referencing briefly before about Lindsey Graham talking about our country being full. Well, no, our country is not full. And if we had a sensible immigration policy in this country for people coming in from south of the border, that increased the number of border agents, increased the number of processing stations. I hate to use the word processing because that just kind of, in some ways, I think it kind of dehumanizes people. That the way I felt back in the day when they turned personnel departments into human resources department, as if humans were just another resource to be, you know, to be relegated to different parts of the, you know, the industry or economy. That these people, the societal wealth that would be generated, economic wealth that would be generated by bringing these people into this country legally and protected by the laws of this country, would be, you know, just would be societal changing. I mean, the fact of the matter is that these people are coming here because the only people that are talking now about open borders are the Republicans. Are probably taking out billboards south of the border. They're saying open borders north, you know, come north, come north, come north. And we're talking on the media about we have the open borders here, because Joe Biden has never come out and said the borders are open. The Democrats are not saying the borders are open. It is Republicans that are saying that, that is exacerbating, perhaps to some extent, exacerbating the problem, but they certainly have no interest in improving the problem, either societally, by our, the, and economically through the immigration policy or our tax policy.
Well, yeah, Mark, you know, I think that you've said a mouthful, but I think the real point is that to solve the immigration problem, the first issue of debate is how many immigrants should we be taking into the country? Second level is then how do we choose which of the immigrant applicants do we allow into the country under what standards? And then the third is how do we assimilate them? And there's Washington is unwilling to talk about number one. They aren't, we've never heard a discussion. No one can tell us if they call in what the numbers are that we've decided upon for the numbers of immigrants, because that's kept in the background. And the way we would decide them as well is not something that's well understood. These are the very prongs of the problem that Congress needs to focus on, to deliberate on, to solve the problem. The same Tom Krugman discussion that I talked about, he pointed out that from a cynical standpoint, it's the unlawful immigrants who are actually most profitable to the country, because when they earn income, they have a job, they have taxes withheld, but they aren't eligible for any benefits. So they're essentially a one-way street. They're paying taxes without receiving benefits other than potentially Medicaid in the circumstance in states where Medicaid is deemed to cover any and all people. But, you know, we have a circumstance that requires a rational approach, and all we have is an emotional political approach to it.
So you're not agreeing with the great Senator Lindsey Graham, who said, when we meet those people at the border, turn them around and say, sorry, we're full.
No, I mean, if you look at, if we turned off all immigration, which is, you know, the implication of saying, sorry, we're full means, okay, there's no room in the manger. We're full. But that can't be the answer, because without immigration, we have stagnant population growth. The only growth we've experienced in the prior recent history has been growth in population related to immigration. Without growth in population, the economy has a problem, number one. Number two, job-wise, the immigrants provide a very important workforce that is utilized as an important part of the economy, which we would lose. So we need to have a debate about, like I said, how many immigrants should we have in? Because we aren't full, and I'm confident that even the Republicans would be unwilling to have a debate in which they said they wanted to shut down immigration. All we hear from people running for office like Donald Trump is they want to shut down immigration of what, Muslims? Okay, that's particular types of people.
Right.
Or we want to shut down immigration from the South, Mexico, Latino. Okay, that's another. But, you know, aren't we listening to a dog whistle when we listen to that kind of discussion? Because we're not talking about, they're not talking about, in fact, shutting down immigration. It's just who they want to let in.
So Lindsey Graham's response really is there's 1.7 million people that we have lined up to be deported. Let's deport all of those people before we start letting people in. That's what he says.
Mm-hmm.
Your thoughts?
Well, I don't know. Lindsey Graham is from South Carolina. And if you think of the demographics that he must rely upon to for his vote, I guess he's free to say such things and can do it with some political impunity, although I suspect someday it'll catch up to him. But that doesn't make sense, okay? You know, the fact is that immigration is a constant stream, shutting it down for the period. First of all, is he willing to finance the processes necessary for processing, using the dehumanizing term, the 1.7 million people that are there to be processed?
Well, but they can't do that because they've tied that into, as Biden and they've asked for additional sums of money to handle that. And the Republicans have said, no, these are tied into, you know, the border and all these other things. They don't want to give the resources because they believe that what's going to happen is they're going to double down on what they're already doing. This is what they say their belief
is. Well,
I
think, quite frankly, it's more cynical than that. I think the problem is more important politically than the solution. Having the problem to point at, having the problem
right.
there to blame for is a much more important prong politically than coming forward with the solution to the problem and discussing that. And it's a bit like I said before, the attack on Roe v. Wade was very successful politically until the dog caught the car, and now it's turned around.
You know, Sandy, after this is all said and done, you know, it just is getting worse by the hour, and it's getting worse by the hour, and because there are people who have bought into the things you just said. And they're not, I'm talking about the average person.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, knowing all these open jobs and all those things that are needed, they just have cast that aside. They just believe these people are coming in with their hands out.
Well, yeah. I mean, there is a problem in the southern cities that are near the border with respect to numbers and assimilation. And so people generalize from that problem. And
what's a bottleneck?
Yeah, well, it's because this thing hasn't been solved
right.
over the past. It's not because there hasn't been a wall. It's because of the forces of supply and demand. First of all, the demand for entry into this country has gone way up based on circumstances in other places, some of which we have contributed to, and then the capacity to deal with this new demand has never been dealt with by Congress, okay? And so we haven't figured out the process for dealing with this greatly increased demand.
All right, 844-967-2789 is the number. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about a couple things. We'll be right back. Everything's waiting for you.
Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter. Girls as sharp as her are something rare. But it's sad, she doesn't love me now. She's made it clear enough, it ain't no good to pine. She wants
you know that.
To return.
You know, I'm really having a, I definitely do. It's interesting. This is one of the only English group songs that was sung with an English accent that became a big hit, you know.
It's Herman's
Hermits. That's right.
Yeah. Hey, I don't know how many hits Herman's Hermits made.
They had several.
But this one was.
But they were one of the few that didn't mask their accents with rhythm and blues and what have you.
All right. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. So, Sandy, tomorrow, 3 years since the insurrection. Oh, depending on what side you're on, unrest.
Well, or
riot.
Or it was a...
Just a handful of people who did wrong.
Demonstration.
Yes.
Well, it was a demonstration that ran amok. Giving it its best version of analysis. But the fact is that it's something we all saw. We saw the terror in the actual political figures that were under assault. We saw our vice president being whisked away to safety from a group that was aiming to attack him. We saw gallows and things set up with hanging the vice president in effigy. We saw an angry crowd. We all saw it. And so, you know, the fact is that it's hard to deny what we saw. We saw what we saw. And so we're all sort of fact witnesses to the circumstance. And so it makes it harder for me to understand how people can try and spin this to be something else other than what we saw. Whatever word you want to describe for it, you need to describe, you need to be describing what you and we all saw. And then we have a person running for office now who's promising to pardon, if not all, it's not clear. The promise to pardon them is never provided, the specificity of exactly whether it's everyone or just most of them. But what it demonstrates is the extent to which the president, this was his posse, okay? And he's going to pardon them. And the special prosecutor is talking about using that promise or trying to use that promise to demonstrate the connection. You know, from an evidentiary standpoint, the rules of evidence might or might not permit these statements to be provided as statements against interest, which would make them subject to being introduced in a trial of Donald Trump. But from the public standpoint, we all ought to realize that this just demonstrates the extent to which that mob, let's call it a mob, that mob was clearly Donald Trump's mob. It was called to Washington with months of advance. He started talking about January 6th in November. It was called to Washington at his behest. He was the main speaker, and he was the one who suggested that people, that the Democrats, certainly as a lesson to these people listening, ought to understand the Democrats would fight to the death. So go up there and fight like hell. I mean, you know, he was giving very explicit instructions to a group of people who then went off and ran amok, and a numbers of them who have been convicted now repent and say that they were basically led amok by this leader at the...
You know, Sandy, as you stated, I remember, just like yesterday, watching people with their feet crossed sitting in the offices of the Speaker of the House.
Right.
Right. And
rifling through her desk.
Yes.
Yeah.
And whether you think it's okay because it was a Nancy Pelosi's desk or not, that wasn't the issue, right? I mean, taking the speaker's gavel, moving the podium, and all of those things that these people did, and now we want to minimize that. That should never be forgotten. Is it safe to say that?
Well, it should never be forgotten. It was clearly aimed at disrupting what was supposed to be essentially a ceremonial, part of the ceremonial process of the transfer of power in an election. And it was otherwise subverted. And it was subverted in what became a national conspiracy. I mean, to the point where the electors, these so-called fake electors from Wisconsin, repented and admitted that what they had done was essentially be involved in a conspiracy to obviate an election.
Let's bring on Tim from Eclaire. Good morning to you, Tim. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Thanks for taking my call. You were talking about, the immigration problem earlier.
Yes.
And I think the Republicans like to forget that it was one of their icons who contributed to this, G.W. Bush. I can't remember exactly what it was called, but he did something to, like, open the borders up because all the farmers and that down there were crying for help. So they're part of the problem, but they don't want to talk about that. That's all I got to say.
All right. Thank you very much for the call. Sandy, I don't know.
I don't recall the specific action. I do know that George Bush II convened a commission, a bipartisan commission, that did an extended study and tried to come up with a bipartisan solution to what was viewed then as a border problem, and they couldn't do it. And since then, it's never been done.
So we've got to take a short hiatus. When we come back, we've got a lot to talk about. You certainly can join us, 844-967-2789. On the Earl Ingram Show, it's Friday. That means Friday's with my co-host, Sandy Williams.
You tell her that I'm well and feeling fine.
Feeling fine.
Ooh. Don't let on.
Ooh.
Don't say she's broke my heart.
Ooh.
I'd go down on my knees, but it's no good to find. Walking about, even in a crowd, well, you'll pick her out. Feel so proud if she finds that I've been round. Mrs. Brown, you've got a lovely daughter.